Welcome to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
While some adult mental health metrics have clearly worsened due to COVID-19 pandemic, others are simply expressions of pre-existing unresolved health challenges. Our speakers today will share insights to current adult mental health metrics in Lane County, the emergence of trauma-informed care as a practice, and strategies that can help support greater resilience, recovery, and growth.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, KP.org, Lane Community College, LaneCC.edu, Peace Health, PeaceHealth.org, the University of Oregon, UOregon.edu, and generous support from Lane County and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's March 4th, 2022 program. I'm Kitty Piercy, and I'm the City Club President, proud to be so. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Speakers for today's program, Adult Mental Health, Trauma, and Care, are Dan Isaacson, Co-Chair, Suicide Prevention Coalition of Lane County, Bridget Byfield, Community Resilience Project and retired Child Welfare Supervisor at Lane County, Dr. Maureen Zalewski, Associate Professor and Director of Clinical Training, U of O Department of Psychology. Biographical information on our speakers is available on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. And now I'd like to invite Joel Korn to the podium.
Today's program is the second of two City Club programs dealing with mental health. This program focuses on adult mental health. Children's mental health was the topic of a program on February 11th, 2022. That program can be viewed at the City Club of Eugene YouTube channel, Facebook page, and on our website. Trauma refers to an event, series of events, or set of circumstances that is experienced by an individual, physically or emotionally, harmful to or life-threatening, and that has lasting adverse effects. Event, experience, effects are often referred to as the three E's of trauma. The National Council on Mental Well-Being reports that 70% of adult Americans have experienced some type of trauma at least once in their lives. In public behavioral health, over 90% of the clients have experienced trauma. Experiences become traumatic when they overwhelm a person's ability to cope. Traumatic experiences may be acute, chronic, or complex. A single event, a long-term experience, or a layered, cumulative, and intergenerational wound. Among the difficulties, stresses, griefs, and heartbreaks of the past several years, many adult Americans have weathered traumatic events in the context of the global pandemic. While some adult mental health metrics have clearly worsened due to COVID-19 pandemic, others are simply expressions of pre-existing, unresolved health challenges. Our speakers today will share insights to current adult mental health metrics in Lane County, the emergence of trauma-informed care as a practice, and strategies that can help support greater resilience, recovery, and growth. Our first speaker is Dan Isaacson.
Well, thank you very much. I'm most especially thankful for City Club for talking about an issue that is incredibly important in our county, and also to be able to do this in person. I am so excited to actually see real life friends in life as opposed to on Zoom calls. I read an article in the New York Times Magazine not too long ago. It was about how elephants in Africa are going mad, raping rhinoceroses, killing one another, stampeding without provocation. These intelligent, sensitive giants have become very, very disturbed. The cause, they believe, is overwhelming, unrelenting trauma, stress, be it poachers shooting at them and their families, or land development squeezing and destroying their habitat, profound and irreversible changes to everything they know about their world, everything about what it means to be an elephant, and it's driving them mad. Elephants aren't being elephants anymore. Up is suddenly down. That's what COVID has been like for a good number of our population. Up is suddenly down, down is suddenly up. The virus hit us like a smart bomb, targeting everything and all the weak points that we as a society have been neglecting here in Lane County, across our state, and across the country. Truth be told, we're not good at recognizing an exponential growth of an existential threat. We went into the pandemic in trouble. Oregon ranks not near the bottom, we are the bottom in national mental health care funding. Couple that with the fourth highest homelessness rate, the 17th highest rate of adults in poor health, and the number one use of methamphetamine, and we begin to get an idea for how one impacts the other. We rank second in the country for addiction and last in treatment. 20% of Oregonians suffer from either addiction to alcohol or drugs. That's 1 in 5 Oregonians. During the pandemic, we saw a 70% rise in overdoses, a 30% rise in homicides, an 8% rise in domestic violence. And here in Eugene, we saw a 40% rise in hate and bias crime last year alone. Elephants aren't acting like elephants anymore. It shifted everything we know about how we live, how we communicate. It changed how we work and even how we mourn, with most funerals happening virtually or being postponed indefinitely. Those of us who don't fall into the above categories have labored to find reason and purpose within the fog of this thing. And there have been glimmers of hope that have shined through. The suicide rate here in Lane County prior to the pandemic is 4 times greater than 84% of the counties in the country. I'll say that again. The suicide rate here in Lane County is 4 times greater than 84% of the counties in the country. So when COVID began, we braced for the worst. The Suicide Prevention Coalition of Lane County got to work, training over 900 members of our community to serve as a mental health neighborhood watch. Aside from the usual suspects like social workers, teachers, healthcare providers, we train taxi cab drivers, construction workers, and bank tellers, because it's those folks who know their community very well. We focus on city and rural communities just as much as everybody else, and we figured that it was the baristas who serve coffee in the morning and the bartenders who serve beer at night that know their community better than most. Suicide rates are evenly split between rural and urban here in Lane County, but the services are anything but. Almost all of what's available in terms of mental health care, counseling, and even support groups are located in the Eugene-Springfield area. But if you live in Lowell or Blue River or Mapleton, there are almost no services at all. It isn't surprising that with one of the highest suicide rates in the nation, if you live in places like Junction City, Florence, or Cottage Grove, the suicide rate is even more, despite the state psychiatric hospital being right down the street. COVID forced us into our homes and gave notion to the Zoom call. Because our concentration was no longer diluted by our line waiting, our commutes, our daily lives, that took us away from the richness of our acquaintances and loved ones, we began to find solace in the networks we already have. Our folks noticed that a 70% increase they had with folks in their immediate network during the lockdown, albeit virtually. The results here and around the nation saw a reduction in suicide in 2020, the first in decades. In what experts call the halo effect, a rare event that occurs usually with national tragedies where everyone feels united toward a common foe. The last time this happened was in 9/11 in Pearl Harbor. But I and others believe that it is proof that the human element is real, that the connection between us is something that you can actually track, and its effect on the social capital of a society can predict how it will fare in the face of every metric we use to judge the health of a community. Those areas that had pre-existing roots, that fostered methods of keeping people tethered to one another, and had simple things like broadband internet access, had markedly lower upticks in things like overdose, homicides, thefts, and even COVID relief fraud. The things that bind us saved us, and we learned. Parents learned that their teacher's job really is very difficult. Companies learned that their employee location isn't necessarily tied to productivity. The public learned how important it is in knowing who your neighbor is. And we all learned just how fragile our mental health care system is. Our purpose in this dynamic age must be to change, and to make change our friend and not our enemy. Our shared future must be one that learns the importance of mental health care, dismantles the stigma around it, and revives the connection between equal opportunity, shared responsibility, and the faith that we can all overcome even the darkest of yesterdays. COVID has been equal in its pursuit of us, but it sure wasn't equal into whom it ultimately found. Not everyone could stay home, stay distanced, and stay safe. A friend of mine told me a story. He's a local contractor here in town, and he had a couple come in a few years ago, very nice, very polished, very upscale, who wanted to complete the home that they had been working on because the first contractor that they had hired had embezzled almost $400,000 from them. So they got to work, putting up the plans, and then they kind of dropped off the radar for a couple years. She came back. The couple had by then divorced, and she wanted to complete the house. Over the next 2 years, they spent developing and finishing this absolute magnificent mansion, 12,000 square feet, just up the road from here, set on the river. They were just about to put the finishing touches on this house when the Holiday Farm fire came through and burned it all to the ground. She was obviously devastated and considered walking away with whatever the insurance company would offer. But my friend and her sat down and worked through the best way to make her whole, finished the project, they went on their way. About a year and a half later goes by, and he runs into her again at Albertsons. This time, she's disheveled, she's unkempt, something is clearly wrong. And he asks her, is everything okay? She said, no. He said, well, what's going on? COVID. It turns out his client is a local emergency room physician. And while she took the realities of someone embezzling a part of her life savings, the divorce of her husband, the destruction of her dream property to a natural disaster that's once in a lifetime, and the ensuing fight with insurance, it took only 14 months to destroy her with COVID. She said, quote, I can't do this anymore. I can't listen to another family and tell them that their loved one is gone. I can't listen to another internet cure. I can't wade through wave after wave of need and pain and grief. The effects of those who have been standing in the gap throughout this aren't yet realized and have yet to be found. As COVID fades into our memory and our attention turns to the next pressing matter, it would be a mistake to lose sight of what we learned, who we learned it from, and the sacrifices so many gave to protect us, to heal us, and to keep the lights on. Trauma is a chronic condition, lingering far beyond our expectations, and as teachers, medical professionals, police officers, and others wrestle with where they fit in the new normal, we can support them best by seeing them, seeing not just the job they do, but the person inside, the human element, just as vulnerable as the rest of us. Like those African elephants, so many people over the past 25 months seem to lose themselves, seem to lose their innate sense of humanity. And if we want to regain it, we have to remember that unspoken bond that we all share and acknowledge it, nurture it, and invest in it. Thank you. I'd like to introduce Bridget and do a special call out to the Eugene Weekly article that we have out. It is an entire expose on what she's about to speak to. The TIP organization is a gold standard, shovel-ready mental health program that can be launched today. It is so valuable that a national TIP organization has offered a buy-in that they will pay for this entire year themselves if we can get the buy-in from both the city and the county to pick up the tab, and that tab is only $60,000. So I'd like to introduce Bridget, and thank you for your time.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you for having me, and I really appreciate your interest in Lane County. I like the analogy with the elephants, because Trauma Intervention Program, which we'll refer to throughout this talk as TIP, is bringing elephants back to being elephants. Trauma is the first response program that's made of volunteers. Please take a moment and just think of someone in your life who you care about. Maybe somebody you've even kind of taken care of at some time. Maybe you're thinking of a parent, a child, a sibling, a friend, or maybe a neighbor. Okay, this is always hard for me to narrow down because I do have a lot of people in my life. But don't worry, we're not going to tell anybody who you picked. Nobody needs to know who it is. Just think of that person. Now imagine that special someone who will remain nameless has just witnessed or endured a life-altering traumatic event. Maybe Papa didn't wake up from his nap. Maybe there was a terrible car accident. Maybe your daughter's friend completed suicide, a child drowned, an overdose. Any number of life's tragic but all too common events have occurred. Last thought, you're not there. You're out of town. Maybe your cell phone was in a dead area, or you had that ringer on silence again. Your special person needs your support. This situation is referred to by the Trauma Intervention Program as that horrible hour. The horrible hour. To really understand the importance of what TIP volunteers do, you need to understand what is called the horrible hour. The horrible hour is that hour immediately following a tragic event. Many TIP clients have told us that this was the worst hour of their entire lives. There are five aspects of the horrible hour that make it a terrible time, and it makes it so important for a TIP volunteer to be there. First, the horrible hour involves a huge loss in a person's life. It may be the loss of a spouse of 50 years, the loss of a child, or the loss of a home. We experience losses as we go through our daily lives, but when TIP is called to help, it's probably a pretty big loss. Number two, the horrible hour is something that our clients never planned for. They were taken totally by surprise. In many cases, we have been called have just made a terrible discovery. Say a woman just came home from shopping and finds her husband dead. That discovery just begins her horrible hour. The third aspect is those that we are called are not experiencing their horrible hour in a nice, quiet, familiar environment. Rather, the environment is often chaotic. It may be a noisy emergency department, or on the side of a freeway, or in a person's home with emergency personnel coming and going and all these strangers in their home. The fourth aspect, often the person is experiencing the horrible hour is alone. Loved ones haven't arrived yet. The people who are there might be emergency responders who seem to be very busy and serious, or well-intentioned helpers who say and do all the wrong things, or family members who they themselves are traumatized. The fifth aspect is the person experiencing the horrible hour is often asked to make dreadful decisions. What mortuary should I pick up my dead child? Should I donate his organs? How should I tell my child his father killed himself? Unfortunately, the person faced with these dreadful decisions does not have the experience, the information, or the clear thinking to make them. These horrible situations leave those who are called to assist devastated. Each person reacts differently, but it's very common for our volunteers to encounter people who are shocked, confused, shaking, sobbing, angry, guilty, and questioning. But the word which best characterizes the people that are called to help is lost. TIP volunteers arrive to guide them through the worst hour of their lives. So what do these volunteers do? Well, first, they provide emotional support. They listen, they touch, they let the person know that you're not alone. Someone cares about you. Second, volunteers serve as protectors. If necessary, volunteers protect those from helping the unhelpful helpers and from the media, from the carnage, or from the consequences of their own forgetful or impulsive behavior. Third, volunteers are information advocates. They tried to obtain information about the situation from emergency responders for those who desperately need it. Our volunteers function as educators. For example, they may explain what those who we are assisting are feeling is normal, or they may educate a parent about how to talk to their five-year-old about the death of her father. Fourth, our volunteers help those they are helping by developing a simple plan that will guide them through the horrible hours ahead of them. This plan may include information about mortuaries, the coroner's procedures, cleanup services, and the practical things that need to be taken care of once a death has occurred. Finally, volunteers help our clients make the tragic event special and a personal event. Volunteers might help a client say goodbye to a loved one, or obtain a lock of hair, or retrieve a wedding ring. In summary, TIP volunteers walk into chaotic situations to help people who are alone and temporarily incapacitated. Volunteers serve as guides throughout what we have called the horrible hour. By providing the service described, the volunteers help traumatized clients regain a small sense of control in a very uncontrolled environment. While our clients are certainly nowhere near okay when our volunteers leave them, at least they have some information and support so that they can move forward. This sounds amazing. So what kind of program can provide for an entire county that would make volunteers be available for these situations? Is this really within Lane County's reach? So now I'll tell you more about TIP. Trauma Intervention Program, TIP Incorporated, was founded in 1985 and has a long history of establishing and operating successful community trauma response programs. We call these trauma intervention programs TIP since it was established, and 14 very successful TIP programs in our county. A list of all of our TIP chapters can be found at www.tipnational.org. The TIP organization and its chapters can bring to Lane County proven experience. Most of our chapters have been operated for more than 20 years. Experience working with first responders nationwide. In all of our TIP chapters, the requests for services are activated by emergency responders and hospital critical care personnel. The programs would not work without their strong buy-in. Although we have strong partnership with emergency agencies and hospitals in each chapter, TIP chapters are independent nonprofits and are not part of a government agency. Experiencing operating programs which respond on a 24/7, 365-day basis to create scenes, arriving with an average of 22 minutes. TIP provides services that are ethnically diverse communities, including in San Diego, Orange County, California, and Las Vegas, Nevada. TIP has demonstrated an ability to work within diverse communities. They have developed teams of translators to assist in serving these communities, and in many cases, the resources have been tailored to specific populations. The programs take a broad brush approach. Call us for anyone, anytime, any crisis, in any location. Each of the TIP programs work in collaboration with multiple agencies, including chaplains programs, social service agencies, mental health agencies, the Red Cross, and many others. These agencies are listed in a TIP resource guide that is given to every client served. In short, TIP has demonstrated the ability to establish community trauma response teams and operate them successfully. So what role will the TIP organization fulfill? The TIP organization has demonstrated expertise and experience in program design, volunteer recruitment, volunteer training, volunteer management, staff hiring and training, and program policies and procedures, training of hospitals and public safety personnel, program evaluation, private sector funding, and ongoing operation of local nonprofit organizations. The TIP organization would provide all these services and functions. In summary, TIP volunteers support residents on the worst days of their lives. TIP makes city emergency response systems more efficient by freeing responders from scenes sooner so they can get back to service. Because TIP is a large group of volunteers, TIP can guarantee to emergency responders an average of 22-minute response time on that 24/7, 365-day basis, 100% of the time. TIP volunteers give TIP clients a comprehensive resource guide, and TIP has a critical incident resource team. TIP also has a Heroes with Heart dinner, has a bilingual response team. A TIP program increases the city's ability to respond to major incidences, whether it be a school shooting, a car crash involving multiple casualties, or even a sudden death of a city employee. TIP is an important part of city's emergency preparedness plan. If a major disaster occurs involving casualties, TIP can mobilize many experienced volunteers within 1 hour of being dispatched. TIP has a diverse group of volunteers who can meet special needs of victims. For example, there are TIP volunteers who can sign, as well as TIP volunteers who are bilingual. Also, TIP has a large pool of female volunteers who can meet the needs of women who have been raped and victims of domestic violence. TIP gives residents of the community an opportunity to become involved in public safety and make a difference in the lives of their neighbors. TIP volunteers develop skills, confidence, and experience to help family members, coworkers, friends, and neighbors when tragedy strikes, even when the volunteers are not in their formal TIP roles. TIP plans for comprehensive crisis services that involve following essential components. Volunteer recruitment. TIP Inc. will conduct a rigorous volunteer recruitment campaign using social media, print media, the recruitment opportunities provided by Lane Public Safety Departments, posting of recruitment flyers, and encouraging active crisis interventions to recruit others through their work, church, and social network. Training. TIP will conduct 2 volunteer training academies in Lane County annually to train citizens to be crisis interventions. Quality control. Within 24 hours of every call out, the emergency responders who called for a TIP volunteer will be sent a Give Us Feedback card with a request to return it to the TIP staff. These feedback cards will be reviewed, and if corrective action is required, TIP staff will take necessary steps to correct the issue. In conclusion, before coming to Lane County in 2006, I lived in Multnomah County and worked as a volunteer for TIP for nearly 8 years. I personally witnessed the value of this program and low and high profile cases. I was sent here from Gresham to Thurston to meet the first responders who entered into the high school cafeteria, unsure if their own children and neighbors would be there. I will never forget their courage. I know the value of this program and to bring to our community. With TIP active in Lane County, that special person, think of them, they won't be alone. Thank you.
Thank you, City Club, for this invitation to speak about my work. I am Maureen Zalewski, and I'm going to be speaking about my perspective about parent mental health disorders, both before and during the pandemic. I'm an associate professor and the director of clinical training at the University of Oregon in the psychology department. I'm a licensed psychologist in Oregon, and I specialize in a treatment called dialectical behavior therapy skills training, both as a supervisor in the psychology training clinic and through treatment provided by my team. So let's reflect back on many of the pandemic headlines around parenting, including New York Times and other major outlets. Headlines included, "The pandemic is a mental health crisis for parents." "America's mothers are in crisis." This created a media platform revolving around parent, mainly mother, mental health. This attention focused on how the pandemic inducted a new cohort of parents, many for the first times in their lives, into the world of parenting while experiencing mental health symptoms such as crippling anxiety, depression, and stress. In the early phases of the pandemic, a national U.S. survey coming out of Vanderbilt of over 1,000 parents conducted in June 2020 found that nearly 27% of parents reported worsening mental health. This study and others also examined what types of risk factors were related to parents experiencing poor mental health. In their national U.S. survey, worsening of parent mental health was greater among females, unmarried individuals, and those with younger children. In addition, loss of childcare, change in insurance status, and current food insecurity were associated with worsening mental health for both parents and children. In my collaborative work at the University of Oregon on a large project called RAPID-EC, we use a longitudinal sample of over 3,000 parents across the US who had children aged 0 through 5 years old. The study identified parent mental health trajectories from April through November 2020, which was predicted by pre-COVID accumulation of risk and COVID-specific risk factors. Our findings demonstrated that 27% of parents reported persistently high or increasing mental health problems. Pre-COVID cumulative risk and financial strain, decreased employment, and increased family conflict were salient factors predicting these poor parent mental health trajectories. Taken together, these studies, as well as many others, document the rise of parent mental health issues during the pandemic, with acknowledging that certain social, economic, and family-related factors are related to this increase. As an academic researcher and clinician who provides treatment for mental health disorders in parents, and personally as a mother to two young children, I agree that the spiral of parent mental health during the pandemic has been unprecedented and newsworthy. However, I worry that as the pandemic ends, Americans may go on to brand this event as the parent mental health crisis in America, and in doing so, we will have ignored or even worse, possibly obscured our understanding about the reality of this particular population and the reality of the issues. There is a difference between the parents who reported experiencing symptoms of emotional distress as a result of specific pandemic stressors and those parents who have suffered from mental health disorders before they became parents and whose parenting is profoundly affected by those disorders, especially when treatment is hard to access, not available, or ineffective. Well before, as well as during the pandemic, millions of U.S. parents are raising children while having a diagnosis of bipolar disorder, eating disorder, substance use disorders, personality disorders, schizophrenia, post-traumatic stress disorder, experiencing suicidality, or having chronic depression and anxiety. If not treated, these mental health disorders are highly distressing and impairing. And sadly, these disorders, when experienced by parents, remain stigmatized and poorly understood by the public. And yet, around 2/3 of adults with mental health disorders are parents, making the experience of raising children with a mental health diagnosis a far more common experience than most would realize. I would bet that every listener is close to a parent with one of these disorders, was raised by a parent with one of these disorders, or is a parent with one of these disorders. Part of raising awareness of the importance of parent mental health disorders is knowing what it means for their children. The data are clear that having a parent with a mental health disorder places children at risk for developing a mental health disorder across the lifespan. Chronicity, severity, multi-diagnoses, and the presence of other adversity will increase the risk for their children. Of course, some of these children will never go on to develop mental health disorders. Research points to protection that can come from the other parent, having more resources, or other types of support. And while all this is encouraging, we also need to remember that living disorder-free and psychological well-being are not the same. Many adults who had parents with mental health disorders report struggling with intimate relationships, self-esteem, self-control, or other areas of life. If raised by a parent with a mental health disorder that is not effectively treated, it is really nearly impossible not to be impacted. Now, really important point that I cannot underscore enough. This impact on children should not be wielded to shame these parents. Rather, this reality should serve as a societal wake-up call to prioritize the parent and family's treatment and care. While treating parent mental health is a worthy goal of its own, it needs to be recognized that treating parents stands to yield benefits for the mental and emotional stability of their children. An agenda of breaking the intergenerational cycle of mental health disorders within families will require addressing the mental health of parents. My team at the university is learning about how we can break the cycle of mental health disorders within families. One of our projects works with mothers with borderline personality disorder, a disorder marked by extreme difficulties regulating emotions. In a treatment for borderline personality disorder, what I mentioned before, called dialectical behavior therapy. Depending on their own history, these mothers, whether they initially realize it or not, are working to actively disrupt the intergenerational cycle of mental health disorders within their own families. For these parents, working hard in treatment on a long-standing and serious mental health disorder offers the possibility that they can break this cycle. In contrast, for many parents who experienced mental health symptoms during the pandemic, for some of these parents, they can expect their symptoms to recede with the pandemic stressors receding. So I ask, to any parent listening, having the troubling experience of parenting with mental health symptoms during the pandemic, can you imagine the impact it would have on you and your children if this went on for many more years? What if your thoughts and emotions were scarier and darker, your behaviors more out of control, or your basic sense of reality was unreliable or shaky? This is a glimpse of what million parents are experiencing while they raise their children. The parent mental health crisis gained considerable media attention during the pandemic, and this is great. But as the pandemic recedes, we must continue to pay attention to how prevalent parent mental health struggles were before the pandemic and how prevalent they are going to remain going forward. Parents with mental health disorders and their children need society's sustained empathy and attention. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our YouTube channel and our social media pages.